Today, I have an opportunity to visit with Congressman Randy Feenstra, our 4th District Congressman. And Congressman, thanks for taking time to visit with us.
Oh, Jim, it's great to be on with you today. Thanks for having me on.
I know that it's been a while since you've, well, been in Boone anyway, but you've traveled through here on occasion, of course. But I think, the last time, I believe, maybe you were here for when the EDGE program, and they were doing, they were out at Lang Trailers or something like that.
Exactly right. I was there, and I was at the farm show, and I try to get to Boone 2-3 times a year, and probably more than that. Where I focus on is I have 36 counties, and I try to get to every county at least twice a year. And Boone's obviously very important, and so we try to make it there as much as we can.
Well, I'll tell you what, things have been getting underway in Washington. I know a lot of people just follow along with some of the networks and the headlines that are going on there. But there's a lot of work that actually you guys have been doing. First of all, you got to get reorganized, and I think maybe, and I don't remember all of the committees that Congressman Latham was on, but I believe you're the first since maybe Fred Grandy to be on Ways and Means.
Exactly. I think you're right. I think you're exactly right. And I'm the first in history that I know of, so I got on Ways and Means, and then I asked and pleaded for a waiver to be on the Agricultural Committee because the Farm Bill is coming up this year, and they granted me a waiver, so I'm also on the Agricultural Committee. And the leader actually called me and goes, Randy, I think you're the first person in history that have been on both. So I'm really excited about that, obviously, to help our family farmers and then our small businesses and families. These are two big committees to be on.
Well, of course, I always say the 4th District is, if it's not, well, arguably the ag district, yep, the biggest ag district production-wise, everything in the country.
Absolutely. And we see that, I mean, in Boone with the Farm Progress Show, I mean, just every other year to go to that, you start realizing how big ag is. And the 4th District, I mean, we're either number one or two when it comes to corn, soybean production, cattle, hogs, eggs, you know, poultry, you name it. I mean, we're right there in the top one, two, or three rank.
And I know that, this is the year that you want to get something done. I know a lot of people are kind of watching what's happening in Washington. And how confident are you that... Because usually, once you get on the Ag Committee or you get into the Farm Bill and stuff, you get the little aspects of it that show up to get to be more of an urban-rural split than a partisan split.
You hit it on the head. It is. And that's why it was so important for me. I had the chair, G.T. Thompson from Pennsylvania, who's going to be chair of agriculture. I had him at the Farm Progress Show. And then I also had him at the State Fair to see what Iowa has to offer. And you know, you think about that the Farm Bill. I mean, there's some big, big titles, big topics when it comes to conservation, when it comes to energy, when it comes to trade. I mean, these are big things that affect not only the agricultural community, but also our manufacturers and our producers, our main streets. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what it can do. And then that sort of also transitions on Ways and Means. Ways and Means is the committee that handles trade. So when we talk about farm access programs, farm market development programs to expand trade, they sort of go hand in hand. So this is going to be really big for us in the next year.
Yeah. Sticking to some of the ag-related things, we know that we recently heard that a group of very well-off athletes have acquired some farm property up in the north part of the state. Investment for them. And I know that those are some of the concerns that, and I've seen some of the reports out of North Dakota, you know, some of the big investors that have acquired property. And I know one of the concerns you have is that good? And then, of course, having it being owned by somebody in this country, that's also a big aspect.
Yeah, I mean, these are two big things. First of all, you know, I believe that Iowa farmland needs to be passed on to the next generation. I mean, you want to keep our producers and our youth involved. We have to make sure that there's a ability to pass that land on to the next generation. And what you said, outside investors coming in, I mean, they don't care about our soils. They don't care about our land, which is a concern. But even a bigger concern is foreign investment. I mean, right now, foreign investors own over 37 million acres in America. That's more land than what's in Iowa. And then we heard in North Dakota when the Chinese communist regime bought land right next to a U.S. Air Force base. Yeah. I mean, this creates a real security and a real problem for us. And this is something that we created a bill called the Agriculture Foreign Investment Transparency Act that we, A, need to know who's buying the land, and then, B, we have to make sure that we prevent our foes and our people that are against us from acquiring the land that are close to our bases. And you know what? I strongly believe that it's got to keep within families. I mean, it's got to stay within Iowa.
The where is the process on that Foreign Investment Transparency Act? Is that through?
It's going through the Agricultural Community or Agricultural Committee right now. We just formed, and I'm hoping that we have a hearing on this in the next month or month and a half. I've also talked to the chairman about putting this in the Farm Bill, and he said too, this is really, really a big deal for our security of our nation and the security of agriculture. So I think we're going to get something done on it this year.
Feel pretty good. I mean, there have been, again, both sides, both in the Senate and in the House side, I know there's been discussions about this, the concerns.
Yeah, it's been very bipartisan, both bipartisan and both in the Senate and the House. So, you know, again, I think everybody sees the security concerns about it. Yeah. And, you know, for all of us, it's all about, you know, who is the most responsible people that should own the land, especially when it comes to our soil conservation. You know, it's typically the farmer, the producer that can do that best.
Sticking kind of with it a little bit here in the state of Iowa, of course, last year they did do the E15, you know, for the service station, stuff like that. I know you're looking more at more of a nationwide opportunity here. How good do you feel about this? There's some challenges out there when it comes to making it available, and then how many of the businesses actually want to be selling E15?
Exactly. You know, well, you listen to a lot of the retailers, and they really do want to push E15, but the problem is that they don't know. You know, it's like, okay, should we push it for 8 or 9 months? And that's what we've been really pushing at the federal level, is that we want E15 year-round, that there's sustainability in E15, that people can get it, you know, whether it be January or whether it be July. So right now, there's a bill that I created, Consumer and Fuel Retailer Choice Act. It's very bipartisan. Actually, we got the bill through the House last year, and then it failed in the Senate. But I was at Superior, Iowa, that has a big ethanol plant, toured that last week. And they said the number one thing that they want is E15 year-round, and they said that would really boost production. And for us, it's all about being energy independent and lowering our gas prices. And this is a way we can do that, and that's why it's so bipartisan.
So, again, feel pretty good about being able to walk this through the House at least again?
Absolutely. I've been working with my colleagues on the other side of the aisle, and, again, this will probably be going through the Agricultural Committee. However, I also reached out to Energy and Commerce Committee to try to get support and to try to get this passed.
All right. Let's talk about a couple of the other things. I know one act that you've been involved with would be the RAINS Act. And again, for those that aren't aware, this is basically spells out a little more legislative authority and executive, some of the executive mandates or directions, orders that are put out there.
Yeah, so the RAINS Act is really regulating from the executive in need of scrutiny act. So what it simply does is says if there's any major rule proposed by federal agencies, I'll use the EPA for example, that rule must be approved by both the U.S. House and the U.S. Senate before going into effect. And we saw this, it really got triggered through the waters of the U.S. This has been a ping pong ball from administration to administration, and right now the EPA has really created some stringent regulations on waters of the U.S., such so that the overreach has said that any activity like moving dirt, plowing, building fences might require a federal permit because they believe that's navigable water areas. So, you know, we have, again, sort of looking bipartisanly as saying, all right, we as Congress have to create law, not agencies. And so that's what this bill would do, is simply saying, wait a minute, before that law goes into effect, it's got to be passed by Congress. And I'm hoping this gets legs. There's a lot of support for it. We just think there's a tremendous amount of overreach right now in our agencies.
I know you've said this didn't matter who was in the executive office. These are things that really should be in the hands of Congress.
That is correct. I mean, Congress is the rule of policymaking body, and we got to take that very seriously. And I think we've given so much power over to agencies that we got to rein that in and bring it back to Congress.
Did want to ask, I recently had a chance to do an interview with one of our service providers here in Central Iowa, Community and Family Resources, and they talk about, you know, substance abuse and some of the issues they're dealing with. Surprisingly, a lot of people, you know, they know and they hear the stories all about opioid addictions and things like that. We know that there are cases out here that a lot of people probably don't want to really realize that they have them showing up right here in rural Iowa. These are serious cases.
Absolutely. So I was an EMT in Hall for 15 years, and actually going around the district of 36 counties, I've heard this time and time from hospitals and nonprofits that this is a really big deal, the opioid addiction. And how it starts is maybe an athlete hurts their knee or leg or whatever and gets hooked, or a farmer hurts their back doing chores or whatever, and they get hooked on opioids. And it's not the person, it's just the addiction. So we created the Rural Opioid Abuse Prevention Act that would allow prevention and treatment and recovery services for individuals who get involved in opioids and have that addiction. And this bill actually made it through the House and the Senate last Congress and got signed by the Biden administration. So now it's in effect. And it really came from the urban centers had this ability to do this. And Senator Grassley and I said, wait a minute, if the urban centers can do it, we have the same issues happening in rural communities. And so we just pushed it over to rural communities. So now not only urban communities can have this opportunity, but rural too. And it's a really, really big deal. And it sort of goes under a lot of silence in our communities. But if you were to ask hospitals and clinics, they see this on a regular basis of this opioid epidemic happening.
Well, or EMTs. EMTs, sheriff's deputies, you know, this seems like they are the ones that end up running into it right face-to-face a lot of times.
That is correct. And it's unfortunate. The people get the addiction and they start stealing or they do things that, you know, are against the law. And, you know, this is a really big deal. And it's also, the opioids are also coming up from the border. To me, we have to secure that border, but a lot of that is coming up where people, whether it be the opioid or fentanyl or whatever it might be, we need to, A, prevent it and treat it, but we also have to stop it from coming in.
I was going to say, that's one of the new things really raising a lot of concern, the fentanyl showing up and stuff. I mean,
yeah, you talk to any sheriff's office right now, this is a really big topic of fentanyl entering our rural communities.
I know that because I get all your press releases, so I get to read them all anyway. But you're working on a program called Precision Ag Loan Farm Act. Is this what something would be tied in with potentially the Farm Bill?
It will be. And this the genesis came out of the Farm Progress Show. When I was walking around the Farm Progress Show, I saw all this new technology and the stuff that, you know, is on the cutting edge for the farming community. And I talked to a lot of farmers. They said, I'd love to have this, but I can't afford it. So what Precision Loan Program does is offers low-interest loans at the $500,000 at 2% interest through the USDA for farmers to buy this precision agriculture equipment so they can retrofit existing equipment also. And this is something that it's really exciting. Again, very bipartisan. And I talked to our chairman. It'll probably be part of the farm bill, but he also wants to do it independently because it really has some legs and offers a great opportunity for our farming community. So really excited about this bill also to help the farmers.
Tell you what, it's one of those. Isn't that amazing, though? What technology, when it's working properly, what technology can do for us?
It creates so much more efficiency. It adds value. It creates more profitability for the farmer. protects our environment and powers our rural economy. So, you know, we have to do everything we can to get it in the producer's hands.
I tell you, one of the, it was at the Farm Progress Show, probably maybe 10, 12 years ago, something. First time I really saw some precision ag-related things. And now it's just, it's common practice to do that because it's the most efficient and cost-effective way to do it.
That's exactly right. Yep.
Well, some of the other, what are some of the other things you see happening in Washington? You know, mostly we're talking about the committees and stuff you're on, but are there some other things that you guys are working on?
Well, the big thing is, you know, so we had the big Tax Cuts and Jobs Act in 2017. This was where we changed our tax structure. Where we, you know, doubled, or we put the child tax credit at $2,000. We doubled the standard deduction. We put 20% business income deduction on. So all those things sunset in 2024 and 2025. So it's very critical for us to extend those and make sure they're permanent. So we're really working on that, and that's going to be part of the debt ceiling negotiations. With the debt ceiling having to be a vote here in the next month or two. We also want to make sure that we extend some of these cuts, because that really expands and creates a strong economic environment, especially for our producers and our small businesses and families. They've taken advantage of a lot of these cuts, and we got to make sure they stay.
Sure. And I know, again, yeah, the debt ceiling, obviously one of the hot issues going on. It's one of those things where we had seen again, when the pandemic was just getting going and the issues it raised, and a lot of dollars were going out there. Now we're kind of looking at, we're going to have to do something here to try to rein this back in a little bit.
Exactly. I mean, we spent, the Biden administration spent over $6 trillion over the last 2 years, and that's on our credit card now. So to me, we got to reduce our national debt and restore fiscal responsibility, and that's Congress's job. So we can chew gum and walk at the same time, meaning that we can cut and we can work with our debt ceiling, but we have to have President Biden come to the table and work with us. Again, we have a split government, so now with a split government, it's time to negotiate and do what's right. You know, there's a lot of threat to our full faith and credit of the U.S. government, and we have to make sure that we protect that full faith and credit. But we can also do that by lowering our national debt.
Well, I know we could talk about a lot of things. Just we could keep going just about all day long. Do not have time to be able to do that, but I do appreciate you taking time visiting with us. Look forward to visiting with you again when you have an opportunity here coming up.
Absolutely. I truly enjoy that. I'll be on any time, and if anybody wants to get in touch with myself, if they have concerns or ideas, or they have problems with any government agency, please contact me at feenstra.house.gov. Thanks so much for having me on.
All right, and I know you do have staff members that are around the district as well that they can contact also. So
absolutely.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you.